I'd like to call this regular council meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the invocation. Sorry, you do the roll call. Would you all rise for the invocation?
We meet to serve our community and endeavor to be worthy custodians of all that has been entrusted to us. Let us be concerned only for what will promote good government. May we bring to our council chamber minds that think and hearts that feel, so that in our deliberations we may display imagination, wisdom, and courage, and the will to do our work for the good of all.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of council are present, save and except Councillor Nutt, who is expecting to arrive later due to a work commitment.
Thank you. A few brief announcements. There is no addendum to the council agenda this evening, but a few announcements. First and foremost, I'd like to welcome Janine Tesmer, who is here this evening. She is the new communications coordinator for the town of Fort Erie. The actual formal title is a bit more impressive than that, but we'll know her as the communications coordinator. And I know that she's reached out to all of the counselors, and she's already been on the job. There's some media releases that have already been prepared, so welcome to the town of Fort Erie. I know you started last Monday, and I know that you're now completely up to speed, and you've been working with Kelly Davis, and that's a challenge in itself, I'm sure. Welcome. Three other announcements. The first has to do with the starting today of the conversion by the town of Fort Erie to LED light-emitting diodes, that is LED for our street lighting. Approximately 3,300 street lights in the town of Fort Erie will be converted between now and April. It's about an 8-week project. And this was approved by the town of Fort Erie Council in our 2015 budget. It's about a $2.3 million project. It's going to end up saving the town of Fort Erie about $210,000 per year in electricity costs, and will reduce our carbon footprint. The LED lights have a potential to save between 30% to 70% on energy consumption and 75% to 95% in long-term maintenance costs. We also have been able to partner with Canadian Niagara Power, which has been a long-standing good corporate citizen and partner with the town of Fort Erie, to generate $220,000 through their retrofit incentive program. So all in all, that will be a very interesting project. The LEDs produce cleaner, whiter light that improves visual acuity and community safety. So we're quite excited about that, and that's a large project, and it's one that most municipalities across the province will eventually undertake, but we're early converters to LED street lighting. Second thing I wanted to mention was that at Denny's, at the Truck and Travel Center on Wednesday, it is celebrating its 45th year in Canada. And if people attend between 7 a.m. and 2 p.m. and purchase a Grand Slam breakfast, $1 of each purchase will be donated to the Fort Erie Fire Department and the and Muscular Dystrophy. So that's Wednesday, January the 20th, which is this Wednesday. And then finally, the Mayor's Youth Advisory Committee is holding a free skate night at the Crystal Ridge Arena on this Friday, January the 22nd, between 8 and 10. Will be an opportunity for interested youth to learn about the Youth Advisory Committee and also to join it. So I encourage all interested youth to come out to the arena. Rumor has it that the mayor may skate as well, and that wasn't as exciting in the old days as it is now, but it's pretty dangerous too. So we look forward to seeing you out there. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. On item 14, consideration of bylaws, bylaw number 5-2016, dealing with the building permit fees, I'd like to declare a conflict. As the company I work for, Real Electric, there a lot of the contractors that we work for will be affected by this bylaw. Thank you.
Are there any fees that you would need to be concerned about in the preceding bylaw, number 4, which has to do with planning? There are some planning fees in there as well, the building ones. Okay. Well, we'll remove that from the package when we get there. Any other disclosures? With respect to, there aren't any, right? So with respect to public notices, we have budget meeting number 4 on Wednesday, January the 27th, and that will deal with the general levy operating budget, and if necessary, a further budget meeting on Wednesday, February the 3rd. All meetings take place at 6 p.m. in the town council chambers. There's a further notice of a public meeting with respect to the Douglastown Black Creek secondary plan. It's a proposed official plan amendment and zoning changes to implement that plan. That will be held Monday, February the 1st, 2016 at 6 p.m. in the Town Hall Council Chambers. There will be an information report available to the public on our website Thursday, January the 28th, 2016. That takes us to Regional Councilor Report. Good evening, Councilor Nunziata.
Good evening, Worship. Good evening, colleagues. Good evening, members in the gallery. I'll go through the list of activities that the region has been involved with post the Christmas holidays, specifically speaking to standing committee meetings of January 5th and 6th. Corporate Services Committee, there was no Corporate Services Committee. That will reconvene next week. Planning and Development Committee, I'm going to try to keep my comments Fort Erie-centric and very specific to issues that we might be facing here in the town of Fort Erie. So we received a report for consideration implementing the growth plan, and it's regional planning commissioners, public regional public works commissioners, and regional single-tier treasurers on the provincial growth plan, endorsing a provincial report implementing the growth plan, seeking provincial and municipal alignment to support a prosperous Ontario. So this was the year for comments when realigning some of those provincial growth strategies, and those final comments have gone to the province, and we'll be anticipating some of the comments back from the province. We would defer to report on the Gateway Incentive Program, retroactive applications. Now, we spoke to it maybe just before the holidays. Under the CIP, as recommended in the Gateway Incentive Program, there were some applicants that either had no knowledge of it, were given misinformation, or didn't take advantage of the opportunity when it presented itself. So going back to regional staff, we said, is there a possibility of retroactivity? And is there a dollar amount attached to that retroactivity? I think there's 4 or 5 applicants that have come forward that have said they either had no knowledge of it or they would like an opportunity to be a part of it. This report is under review right now. It'll be passing through committee at development, planning and development committee. And if it's ratified at that point, then it'll go to committee of the whole and hopefully it gets ratified. I'm fully supportive of this. I don't necessarily think that those business owners or developers that didn't have an opportunity to tap into those that incentive program should be penalized. I don't think that's the role of council anyways to pick winners and losers. So I'm hoping that the retroactive plan will go into effect. It's very specific. It's not open-ended. It specifically says you must have your application now and by April, those are the criteria. So I'm hoping that there's some other interested parties that come forward and try to tap into the Gateway Incentive Program. We've had some recommendations with the Greater Niagara Circle Route Committee regarding signage templates, a request to investigate options for a Port Robinson to Chippewa extension, understanding that the Circle Road does pass through the town of Fort Erie. One of the recommendations is to create signage that is very uniform, so people actually know that they're traveling the Circle Route. Again, working with our regional partners and through the town of Fort Erie, hopefully signage can be created that would convey that aspect that the Niagara Circle Route does pass through the town of Fort Erie. Public health and social services, although I do not sit on those committees, those are my colleagues' turn to sit on those specific subcommittees. We did receive the following reports and recommendations: changes to accountability and roles for public health with respect to a report, Patients First, a proposal to strengthen patient-centered healthcare in Ontario. That report came forward. which basically is that trial balloon that the province floats out there when we anticipate some changes in provincial health care coming down. So be apprised of that. We received the following reports for information. Rabies reemergence in raccoons in southern Ontario. So be very aware and maybe pass that information on to your constituents that there is a reemergence of a strand of rabies in raccoons. Public disclosure of infection prevention and control lapses and correspondence with respect to emergency services dispatch from the clerk at the City of Niagara Falls. We've had our third quarter report from Niagara Regional Housing, and we received an AMO breaking news report, Ontario's consultation on primary home and community health care, all under Public Health and Social Services Committee. Public Works, we received the following reports for consideration. Appointment of Risk Management Official and Risk Management Inspector of the Clean Water Act, which is very pressing considering what we see going on in Flint, Michigan, and just the horrendous mismanagement of clean drinking water there. Illegal dumping, working groups, terms of reference, and Crime Stoppers. Again, I know we've had some issues here in the town of Fort Erie with illegal dumping. Who's responsible for the cleanup? And it's basically a complaint-driven situation where if you happen to see illegal dumpers, please report them. They're costing your neighbors and all of us as taxpayers lots of money in cleaning up their crime. Recommendation from the Transport Steering Committee, appointing one of my fellow councillors to a Regional Niagara Active Transportation Subcommittee. That would have been Councillor Beatty. Recommendations from the Waste Management Planning Steering Committee, nominating another one of my colleagues, Councillor Rigby, as a representative for the Waste Management Planning Steering Committee, and Ministry of Transportation Connecting Links Program application, and that submission was made for Bender Street and Falls Avenue facility. So that's under Public Works. We received the following reports for information, Niagara Region participation in the Transportation Tomorrow Survey. That's going to have implications for the town of Fort Erie, certainly. A CSO cost-sharing program request, memorandum respecting the reconstruction of Martindale Road in St. Catharines, proposed waste-free Ontario Act, and draft strategy for a waste-free Ontario, building the circular economy. And the last report that received under Public Works was the Niagara Region contract claims process. We also received a fantastic presentation this past week from the Early Years Literacy Program, and it was a very well received presentation, especially when you have little kids come forward and talk about their favorite books that they absolutely love. So eventful, but speaking specifically to Fort Erie, there are some issues that we're going to be faced with in the next few months, and I'll make sure I keep council apprised and up to speed on some of those impacts. So I'll leave it up to council for questions, and I'll be more than happy to answer if I can.
Thank you. Do any members of council have any questions? Councillor Zanko and Councillor Pissarro.
Thank you, through your worship. Councillor Nunziata, just out of curiosity, you'd mentioned that rabies, we know that it's reemerged, and I have actually had a few constituents ask me about this, considering we have such rural areas. Is the region, I know in the past the region has dropped bait to avoid rabies. Are they specifically looking at Fort Erie, and has there been any reported cases in Fort Erie?
Great question, Councillor. I don't know the answers to the specifics of that. Certainly, Region Healthcare is monitoring the situation. And I think to your point, I think the dropping of vaccine for rabies, I think that's a MOE mandate. I don't necessarily think that's a regional, or if it's downsourced to the region, I'm not specifically sure on the mechanics of it. But as far as cases in Fort Erie, I'm not sure, but I can get that information for you and pass it along. But I think maybe this is just an awareness piece to make sure that residents who are confronted with wildlife and certainly raccoons, they're aware of the potentiality of contracting rabies if they're too close or they're bit or somehow infected. So I think that's the general concern right now. But specifically to your questions, I can pass those answers on to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Pissarro.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor Redekamp. Regarding the retroactive grants under the CIP, Councillor, what's being done differently this time around? so that we're not in this position again in 2017 for someone to come forward and say, hey, I didn't hear about it, didn't know about it, count me in?
Well, and it's a good question. I think the disconnect as far as elucidating the investor and the building community, there was a bit of a disconnect, maybe with municipal planning staff, maybe with regional planning staff. They're doing a much better job as far as interacting with municipal planning staff as well. They're planning on doing presentations. So I know they're hitting a lot of the municipalities. As a matter of fact, our old colleague, Adam June, will be coming before council, and he will be presenting the strategy and the metrics as far as identifying what's eligible under the retroactive program, what the cost is going to be, how many candidates have come forward to seek that retroactivity. So all those details will be coming forward as a presentation to council, I believe, and certainly town planning staff are very well aware of the interaction that the region is undertaking. At this point, it's the will of council whether or not to expand the program retroactively to some of those builders or investors that missed the opportunity first time around.
Thank you for that. If I could,
yes.
Mayor Redekamp, are there surplus funds available from the CIP program currently, or would this be new dollars allocated to fund this?
It would be new dollars, and you know, my argument has always been simple. I mean, when the Gateway CIP was created, there was never a cap limit. There was artificial or otherwise that said, okay, only the first five or only the first 10 would be eligible. Basically, we dangled that incentive and said we want as much investment as we possibly can take in, and we want the business community to recognize that we're doing our part from the public sector to incentivize them. Now, let's say, for example, only five applied on the Gateway CIP. Now that we have four come forward, that's a total of perhaps nine. And don't quote me on the numbers. I'm just trying to make a point here. So now let's say we have nine that want to tap into it. My logic is simple. If the Gateway CIP was crafted to incentivize as many businesses as possible, then I don't see the difference other than a time factor. So specifically to your point, I think they've allocated roughly, I don't want to set an upside limit, but roughly $360,000 could be the cost to retroactively implementing the Gateway CIP for businesses and investors that want to come forward to utilize it. That money will come out of capital reserves, and that's what we would fund it with.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Redekamp.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Councilor Nunziata. That takes us then to presentations and delegations, and coincidentally, the first delegate is Sandy Nunziata.
Okay, everyone hear me? That's good.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you for indulging me, and I'm taking my councillor hat off temporarily, and I'm stepping forward as a property owner in the town of Fort Erie and a taxpayer. Now, I think it's important to provide this distinction as to what it is I'm requesting and why I'm making the request of council. Now, we have yet to create regulations and companion design guidelines that preserve and protect the historic fabric of Fort Erie, ensuring that new development is compatible with the area's character in the context of protected heritage properties. Now, we've implemented design guidelines and new build scenarios in existing neighborhoods through various site plan control mechanisms, but no such protection is afforded protected heritage properties in the development of adjacent properties, or at least not to my knowledge. Now, with the direction of council, we can start the process of protecting a heritage building or landscape from unsympathetic alteration and loss of character or value. And we can do that by giving a site-protected designation under a yet-to-be-developed charter, or create an incentive program that offsets the costs of design elements that new construction must adhere to within the context of heritage buildings and neighborhoods. Now, so far, it's the planning staff that brings forward new planning policies for council adoption. But where do they get them from? The building and trades community, provincial policy revisions, neighborhood associations, BIAs, or individual property owners that have unique challenges or circumstances that don't quite fit in the comprehensive zoning and planning bylaws. Now, although town planning bylaws capture the majority of scenarios, there always will be some exceptions. or perhaps from a committee, or perhaps from a committee of the town like the Cultural and Heritage Advisory Committee. Now, the Cultural and Heritage Advisory Committee is a creation of council. It has been provided a mandate through a resolution of council, and it is not a decision-making body, but solely finds its purpose in providing recommendations to council. Now, the council, in its discretion, can either accept, adopt, ignore, dismiss, or consider some of those recommendations and not be bound by anything the advisory committee puts forward. Case in point, the Ridgeway Public School. Now, I will preface my comments by saying I have the utmost respect for all our citizen appointees who volunteer their time and effort into making recommendations to council. Now, my experience with the Culture and Heritage Committee has always been enjoyable. In most cases, I found them engaging and very eager to move the agenda of culture and heritage identification, preservation, and conservancy. But I will admit, my expectations with my particular home fell a little short this time around. Now, they were asked to provide comment for a committee of adjustment report, asking for a front yard setback relief. Now, where public engagement and the seeking of stakeholder comments has been the common theme of this council, and rightly so, sometimes it's a little disappointing when the committee of the town renders a recommendation without the input of the very property owner it could potentially impact. And to be clear, it's not an issue that would require broad consultation by a number of residents and property owners or comments from multiple agencies with vested interest. It is one property owner. It is me. So the idea that somehow seeking information, conducting interviews, site visits would have been laborious or time-consuming isn't really applicable. And I think given another opportunity to provide comment, looking through a more holistic lens of identifying heritage properties, I would anticipate the committee being very, very much in favor of adopting the very mechanism I'm asking for. So let's get to it. The direction I'm recommending, and I would hope council would agree with, after consulting with the town planners, obviously, is the implementation of a cultural impact assessment, as prescribed for in the 2014 Provincial Policy Statement. Now, we have yet to create regulations and companion design guidelines that preserve and protect the historic fabric of Fort Erie. Now, a community never stays static, town staff have done an exceptional job of recognizing the needs of our community, and as opportunities and new realities present themselves, make recommendations to adjust. I mean, many times, staff have made recommendations for rezoning or through amendment, either through housekeeping that just make common sense or through a more formal process governed by statutory requirements under the Planning Act. For example, agricultural to special policy for a speedway, open space commercial golf course to institutional for a new high school, residential to light industrial for Helena Street. I think you had that one last week. So you have to be receptive to these changes, and certainly it's the mandate of council to move communities forward. But there is one common thread with all those asked, and that's adjacent property owners have been consulted and asked to provide feedback. Now, with specifics to my property, now in the rush to create two semis, they never stopped and bothered to see if they should. And quite literally, they are attempting to push a size 12 foot into a size 10 shoe. And doing it adjacent to a heritage property, in my opinion, compounds the negative result. But the great thing about what I'm asking for is it takes the decision-making as far as what and where out of my hands, out of planners' hands, out of council's hands, and places it in the hands of a qualified person with knowledge, experience, and education with these matters. And based on that assessment, we have a definitive plan that we can all rely on, void of agenda, void of personal opinion as to what is or isn't appropriate. So I have painstakingly tried to maintain the integrity, the charm, and the character of my home through great cost. I've been sensitive to the neighborhood, to the town, and to the greater community, such as the responsibility of a homeowner with a historically designated property for its architectural significance. Now, my home is a listed property, formally identified by the Culture and Heritage Committee in 2002 and designated by the town of Fort Erie in 2003 for its heritage value under Part 4 of the Interior Heritage Act. It is listed on the Canadian Register. And in 2010, it was registered on the Parks Canada site. And to my knowledge, I think it's only one of three or four designated properties within the town of Fort Erie. Now, when the comprehensive bylaws of the town of Fort Erie were adopted in 1993, the property was not yet designated. So as such, the R349 zoning of semi-detached for the adjacent property may have been appropriate. But I would think that a more comprehensive evaluation would have been undertaken. It was not. And perhaps those kinds of decisions are concern-driven. And if it isn't brought forward, it isn't acted upon. Right or wrong, no review is conducted. Further compounding the issue, nothing has been contemplated on the adjacent properties next to my heritage home for the last 100 years. So where those adjacent properties have sat vacant. So to summarize, I am hoping for a recommendation of council to direct staff to provide a report on implementing a cultural impact assessment, a heritage impact assessment as part of the site plan approval process for adjacent properties of protected cultural or heritage assets, specifically to adopt, like so many municipalities throughout Ontario already have, 2.6.3 of the provincial policy statement, which reads, in quote, planning authorities shall not permit development and site alteration on adjacent lands to protected heritage property except where the proposed site alteration has been evaluated and it has been demonstrated that the heritage attributes, in this case architectural, of the protected heritage property will be conserved. In so doing, the town adopted policy will serve 100% of the properties it is designed to impact and 0% of the properties it was not intended to impact. And what I mean by that is heritage properties are finite in the town of Fort Erie. They are a known entity, and as such, so is the adjacent property that comes with it. The criteria would be very simple. The definitions are already in place by a number of communities that rely on this policy to preserve heritage and culture assets. Specifically, for example, adjacent lands. Those lands contiguous to a protected heritage property, otherwise defined in the municipal official plan, the OP can define the extent of adjacent lands and distances from development areas required to minimize or mitigate or avoid an impact on the heritage attributes of an Ontario Heritage Act designated heritage building. Buffer areas can be defined based on the specific heritage attributes identified for the heritage property. Protected heritage property. Real property designated under Part 4 of the Ontario Heritage Act. The Ontario Heritage Act enables municipalities, planning authorities, and the province to identify and protect real property with cultural heritage value or interest. Evaluated. An impact on the heritage attributes of a protected heritage property can be minimized or avoided by mitigative measures and alternative development approaches, buffer zones, zoning, setback, design guidelines that harmonize mass, setback, setting, and materials, regulations of density and height, and other site plan control mechanisms, all this done through a heritage impact assessment. Heritage attributes, the principal features, characteristics, context, and appearance that contribute to the cultural heritage significance of a protected heritage property. Qualified person, and this is very, very important, must be prepared by qualified individuals such as architectural and landscape consultants with knowledge of accepted standards of historical research, identification, evaluation, and methods of conservation and mitigation. So step one is simple. A motion by this council to direct staff to provide a report on implementing a heritage assessment impact for adjacent lands to protected heritage assets, while concurrently deferring any site plan approvals on those same adjacent lands until such time a heritage impact assessment is the will of this council, and as such, a heritage impact assessment is completed. So I'll open up for questions.
Mr. Annunziata, good timing too. You're right on.
Good.
Any questions of Councillor Annunziata? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you to Mr. Annunziata. You mentioned that you've taken umbrage with the recommendation and the advice that the Committee of Museum Cultural Heritage had given to the Committee of Adjustment because they didn't consult you. Did you not have any other forums to provide your own opinion and evidence to the Committee of Adjustment, or is the Museum and Cultural Heritage Committee your only mechanism as a resident to express your concerns?
Well, considering it's a heritage and cultural issue, I would like to think that the committee would have comments or recommendations. Now, they were never asked whether or not a cultural impact assessment should be conducted or shouldn't be conducted. As far as I know, they were either not knowledgeable to the statutory requirements under the Planning Act, or that's not what they were being asked for. So at the time, they were asked to give comments on a relief of a front yard setback. My estimation is it's more piecemeal. If a cultural or a heritage impact assessment is conducted, then out of that assessment, front yard setback, side yard setback, contacts, massing, materials, what and where can be placed next to that adjacent property would just naturally come out of that report. So in my estimation, I thought it was premature. Now, to make that recommendation that was passed on to the Committee of Adjustment, I take exception to the fact that I wasn't contacted. Now, this is a cultural and heritage committee that has always done a fantastic job as far as reaching out to those affected property owners or to do their research, do their due diligence, and in this time, they didn't. And just to give you a quick example, this is an issue that went before the committee on December 8th. They adjudicated, they made a recommendation on December 8th, and it was passed on to the Committee of Adjustment by December 11th. I found out that it was actually on the agenda on December 9th. So I don't know if it was open for public consumption, if it was an agenda item that was circulated to the public, but as far as I know, I had no knowledge that the Cultural and Heritage Committee was providing comment for the Committee of Adjustment. So just so we're clear, they made a decision. It was on their agenda for December 8th. They made a decision December 8th, and it went to Committee Adjustment December 11th. That, in my estimation, isn't the most robust consultation process, isn't the most robust investigative process. So in my estimation, I think the committee dropped the ball on this one, not simply from what they were asked to do. I don't think they should have ever been put in that position. Like I said, a more robust process, a more comprehensive process would have just maybe made the recommendation for a heritage impact assessment, which would have taken into account the setback requirement and alleviated the concern from the Culture and Heritage Committee.
Councilor Passero.
For you, Mayor, thank you for that. My question was, you took umbrage with the committee because you felt that your concerns were not being passed along to the Committee of Adjustment through the committee. Did you not have an opportunity to address the Committee of Adjustment to express your concern?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Okay. You also made a point which mentioned heritage attributes to be conserved when an adjacent development takes place. Which heritage attributes of your home won't be conserved if the neighboring development takes place as proposed?
Well, again, my property has been designated for architectural significance within the context of a neighborhood, within the context of the ornamental features. And again, I could provide my opinion, but that's the one thing that I'm trying to avoid. I mean, this has to be a process, in my estimation, where an independent third party is going to make that assessment as far as if there is any impact on the architectural significance of the heritage property, whether through context, whether it's through massing, whether it's through scaling, whether it's through building materials on the adjacent property. So I can't really answer your question as far as what I would consider affecting the architectural significance of my home if, I don't know, it all depends, I guess, on what goes there on the adjacent lands. And I guess that's what we're trying to get to the bottom of. What is going to go on the adjacent lands and how that building is going to affect the heritage attributes. So I think it's premature for me to comment as far as how they're going to be compromised if I don't know what's going there.
Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor Redekamp. So do you believe then that the heritage designation of a home or a property should supersede the rezoning of adjacent property? That all of a sudden, once a heritage designation is put in place, all bets are off to what somebody could do? Because right now, as you mentioned, we are just looking at a front yard setback. That was the impetus for this ball to start rolling. But you've also mentioned that you're even calling into question the rezoning and what could be permitted amongst or within that rezoning. Is my question clear? Do you think one supersedes the other?
It's not my decision or my opinion. The Heritage Act does supersede the Planning Act. As a matter of fact, in 2.6 of the Planning Act, there's, I think, four or five paragraphs specific to heritage preservation and integrity. Specifically, 2.6.3 speaks to adjacent properties not being compromised until a heritage impact assessment is completed. So it's not my opinion if I think that a heritage property supersedes Planning Act. That's what the Interior Planning Act states, that heritage properties, Heritage Act does supersede the Planning Act, or should in the very least work in concert with it.
Councilor Passero.
Yes, through you, Mayor Redekamp. When did this situation come to your attention, Mr. Nunziata?
This situation arose July of 2015.
And what has kind of happened between then and now?
Not a whole lot. From my perspective, I've always been very conscientious in making sure that whatever goes on the adjacent property is not going to compromise the integrity or the value of my property. That's not to say that whatever goes there, I have a say on it. I'm not the property owner. But there is a mechanism in place under the Planning Act that affords me as the owner of a heritage property to ensure that the integrity is maintained. And that's the process that I've been pursuing for probably the last 4 or 5 months.
If I could, is there an acceptable distance between your property and the adjacent property where this would not be an issue for you? Like,
well,
if the adjacent property was, let's say, 20 acres and this was happening on the far side.
Again, that's not necessarily my opinion, because right now there is no contemplation for recognition of the protected heritage home. Basically, it falls strictly under the planning bylaws, which sets out setbacks for specific zoning. So that's the only terms of reference we can use, that if it's 1 meter, if it's 1.5 meters, as per the Town of Fort Erie Comprehensive Zoning Bylaws, then that's appropriate. What I'm asking for is, number one, the recognition that that is a protected heritage property, and as such, according to the Planning Act, that any development on the adjacent land, and again, it's by definition, it's not my interpretation of what adjacent is, it's a contiguous, connected to, or close by piece of property that may impact the architect, in this case, the architectural significance of the heritage home, either through massing, either through scale, either through inappropriate setbacks, either through distance. That's basically what the Planning Act defines. And I guess that's the direction I'd like to go in, because right now it's real simple. It's R349 and it's 1 meter. It's 1.5 meter. Maybe that's appropriate. Maybe it's not appropriate. But again, I don't want this opinion-based. I want it independent, and I think a heritage impact assessment would certainly provide that clarity and that pathway to make sure that this is as an objective process, that it's void of any agenda and personal opinions.
Mr. Searle?
Thank you, Mayor DeCamp. So is that what currently exists then? It's the R349 is a 1.5 meter setback from the property line, and then your home has a 1.5 meter setback from the property line. So we're looking at 3 meters in between the possible build of the two?
I'm probably going to have to defer to planning staff, but I believe that it's 1 meter. And if there's a second story, then it becomes 1.5 meters. And every story above that, or if there's an attached garage, sorry, if there's an attached garage, then it's 1.5. If it's something to that effect. Ultimately, though, it's 1 to 1.5, and each additional story is another 0.5 meters or even an additional meter. So the property line and then the setback on either side of the property, correct.
So if the new build were to go ahead as planned through your merit account, given even the smaller of the two figures, then there would only be 2 meters between the furthest edge of your home, because you'd have 1 meter between your home and your property line, and there would be 1 meter between that property line and the new build.
Okay, so Councillor, I know what you're getting at with respect to my setback. In 2004, through Committee of Adjustment, we made a request to build within the setback, and that's what we did. So we went from a 1 meter setback to roughly a half a meter setback. Through the surveying process conducted in July and August of the adjacent property owner, they recognized that the setback was violated by 17 inches. So technically, if I was afforded a 1 meter setback, now it's roughly down to, I want to say, 20 inches. Sorry, I want to say, yeah, about 20 inches, 20 inch setback. So I have built within the 1 meter setback. So if they were to build within the prescribed zoning, which is 1 or 1.5, their house would be closer than 2 meters.
So all the more reason that this is of importance to you, because if they're at the 1.5 meter mark, that would have probably greater detriment to your property than if it was.
Well, I'd like to think that whatever the process is and whatever the building contemplated is, it's going to be appropriate with respect to the scale and the distance from the heritage home. Yes.
Okay.
If the decision is made that it has no impact on it from an architectural attribute perspective, then so be it. Like I said, I'm not here to force the hand of town staff or the Culture Heritage Committee. I'm here to secure an independent third-party review through a heritage impact assessment that's going to make that determination.
Okay. Councilor Passero?
Just one thing further, Mr. Mayor. I'm not aware, and I don't know if members of council are copied, but are you at liberty to let us know what the Committee of Adjustment decision was in this case?
Public decision?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the Committee of Adjustment allowed the building within the front yard setback. So the Committee of Adjustment, I think the front yard setback was 9 meters. The Committee of Adjustment approved a 6-meter front yard setback.
Thank you for that information. Thank you, Mayor Redekamp.
Thank you. Any other councillors? Mr. Nunziata, just with respect to the process of your home being designated,
mm-hmm.
is that that's a voluntary process, is it not? Individuals who have heritage homes can cooperate with the Heritage Committee for a designation?
Yes. The only time it no longer becomes a voluntary situation is if, for example, the homeowner applies for a heritage easement, and that can be done through either the Heritage Trust Foundation, and they actually put the heritage property on title, and there's easements, and basically the property owner is beholden to maintain it, to make sure that the heritage attributes are up to date. And there's, you know, a lot of property owners find a problem with that because they don't have the flexibility to perhaps do something later down the road. So that's only in that circumstance, that would be the only circumstance where the decision-making power is relatively taken out of the property owner's hands. In this case, when I was approached by the Heritage Committee and they identified my property, I certainly had no problem, having the home designated. And I thought the Heritage Committee was very, very thorough in their investigation and making recommendations, not only to this council, but Heritage Ontario.
I recall the ceremony. I believe it took place in the atrium here.
Correct. Yeah.
You might have even been playing football in those days.
I was. Yes. Hence, and that's a great point because hence the problem of the setback. I think I was in Edmonton playing football at the time when the contractors unfortunately miscalculated and they built it a few inches over the accepted Committee of Adjustment requirements. So, yes.
In connection with the addition, did you follow any processes in terms of materials, the architecture to make that compatible with your existing building?
Great question, and absolutely. And so part of the process that I had to go through once the property was designated is if I did have anything contemplated as far as an addition or as far as renovations, I had to go through the Heritage Committee and I had to get those approvals. So, for example, the roof lines, the brick. We had to import, old Chicago-style brick at an incredible cost. The whole idea is to make any addition or renovation look like it's always been there. And through incredible cost, that's what we did. Doric columns from South Carolina. Brown windows to replicate the windows in the original building at an incredible cost, just respect to millwork. So, yes, there was a considerable amount of outlay as a property owner to put the addition on and make it look like it has always been there.
If I might, I recall reading the minutes of the Heritage Committee, which was probably part of one of our agendas in December, and it seemed to me that this requirement of a heritage impact assessment is something that the Heritage Committee could order, but it's not mandatory?
Well, again, in understanding the mandate of the committee, it's to make recommendations to this council. And it's up to council's discretion to either accept or maybe, you know, find a middle ground of approving their recommendations. So they're a committee that simply makes recommendations. So yes, it is within their purview and their mandate to make that recommendation. I don't think they were ever afforded that singular question. What they were considering was reducing a front yard setback from 9 meters to 6 meters, and that's what they were commenting on. My concern was, I think they could have avoided that whole issue by simply saying, we don't have enough information, we haven't contacted the property owner, we haven't did a more fulsome investigation as far as what the impact is going to be, and wouldn't a heritage impact assessment take care of all those concerns anyways, instead of piecemealing it like we have through Committee of Adjustment.
Two final questions. Number one, you read from a presentation. Can you make that available to the clerk?
I will make it available, and I'll make sure I send it on to the clerk and to members of council. Absolutely.
Thank you. And the second item is, then exactly what is your request of this council?
Understanding that it's the will of council to direct staff to generate any reports, I'm asking a duly moved and a seconded motion to ask staff to generate a report on implementing a heritage impact assessment and making it part of the planning process or the site plan approval process for any adjacent property next to a protected heritage home. And again, it's a finite resource. I think there's three or four of them, which means there's only three or four, or possibly double that if there's an adjacent property on either side of that home. So you could pretty much eliminate which homes would be impacted by this, which ones wouldn't. I know specifically in my situation, it would be impacted. So that's the
reason. I'm going to do something which lawyers don't frequently do, and that is I'm going to try to boil this all down.
Okay.
What you're asking this council is to request of staff, or I guess really more directly, you're asking council to adopt a policy that would require a heritage impact assessment for properties, for any development adjacent to a designated heritage property.
Right. Yes, I would love to ask council that.
Well, that's what you're asking, and that gives us.
I want to be fair. I want to be fair to council, and I want them to get all the information possible, and that's why I've asked for staff to generate that report, and they can fully vet the report, the recommendation that come forward, and you can make a decision based on that time. But yes, my ideal ask would be for this council to adopt a heritage impact assessment on the adjacent properties to protected heritage homes, correct?
Right. No, thank you, and I appreciate that. Okay, does anyone else have any questions with respect to the matter of Mr. Annunziata? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Mr. Annunziata. I just have a quick question. Do you know what the cost attached to something like that would be? It would be inherent for the town to absorb that cost, correct?
No, not necessarily. I mean, basically, if it's made a condition of development and a condition of site plan approval, I don't necessarily know what that cost is, but I'm going to assume that it would fall along the same lines as any other cost, like, say, a survey of $1,200. Perhaps a cultural impact assessment would be in the ballpark anywhere from $1,000 to maybe $2,000 or $3,000, depending. I really don't know, but it would formulate part of the report to go ahead with final site plan approval.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Mr. Annunziata.
Welcome. Thank you.
That takes us to our second delegation, and that is Paula Barnhart. Good evening.
Worship, Member of Council, thank you for your attention tonight. My name's Paula Barnhart. I've lived in Fort Erie my whole life. I'm here to talk about hockey. I remember as a kid going to school that it was always a big deal when we got to go to the arena for the skates. And now that I'm all grown up, I have two beautiful grandsons that play hockey, and they love the arena. We spend all our time at the arena. So on January 1st, I was watching the World Juniors Hockey League tournament on TV, and there was a commercial for Kraft, put on by Kraft, saying, is your community a hockey community? And do you think that they deserve to have an NHL preseason hockey game and a monetary prize if you can show your spirit? And I thought, yeah, I think we have that. So I put a nomination in to nominate Fort Erie to be the next Hockeyville. So it was January 1st. I was reflecting on the year. I was reflecting on hockey. I did it. It happened. They came back and they gave me a hashtag, which I'm not exactly sure what a hashtag is. I've got a little bit of learning to do. And we're in. So the email said that we're good to go and I need to rally my community. So here I am. So with your permission, I'd like to talk a little bit about the nomination process. I'd like to talk about how the judging is going to happen, and there's a voting process. So if you'll bear with me, I'm going to go through this, and if you have any questions. So I have put in a nomination. We can have everyone in Fort Erie put in another nomination. So there can be multiple nominations. It's not just mine. Mine was kind of based on when I heard the commercial, it came to mind that Kraft, I'm from Stevensville, and the Kraft used to live in Stevensville. And I thought it would be so appropriate for Kraft to come back home. So that's kind of what I put in my nomination. So when they sent me back the email and said, yes, your nomination is accepted and you're good to go. So get rallying, start getting things going. They told me what we need to do as a community. And there's five things that we need to show. So the first one is we have to show our commitment to hockey. Well, that's easy in my opinion. Our boys just came back from Denmark. We've got our meteors. We've got the Andy Pastera Memorial Hockey Tournament. We've got NHL players that come from Fort Erie. We have a referee that came from Fort Erie. We've got all of that covered. So that will show how we support hockey and our commitment to hockey. The next thing they want us to show is how, if we have an NHL preseason hockey game, how will it affect your community? Like, what will that do for your community? And that, again, was a no-brainer for me. We've had a lot of bad losses in the last couple of years, and we've got a lot to look forward to for sure. And I think this would be a really good thing for the community to look forward to. And even better, it would be something for community to actually get involved in doing. It wouldn't be just out there. Everybody would have to help. I want Fort Erie to be a place that people will stop at, not just drive through. Border towns always hard. People are always driving through a border town. It would be so nice for people to be able to stop to at Fort Erie. The next thing they want us to show is our passion for hockey. And again, we've got a wonderful Hall of Fame in our Leisureplex. They want pictures of our little, I've got all kinds of my grandchildren, I've already put one in, of our little beautiful faces of the children that play hockey and how it makes such a big difference. The other thing they want to see is how it will impact the actual community itself. So again, they're asking for pictures of people that will actually be affected, if we do win the prize. The other thing they want to go, they want to know the fifth and final thing they're looking at is what we'd actually do with the money. So I'm going to back up again because I missed a little part that I wanted to say. So the actual prize, there's $500,000 in prize money. There is the top prize is $100,000 and a preseason NHL hockey game. The second prize is $100,000 and there's eight other prizes of $25,000 each. So that's just a little bit about the prizes. So we have until February the 7th to submit these nominations. And again, we can put as many nominations as we can that will show this. We can also do this through Facebook and we can do this on Twitter. I have put it out on my Facebook page. I've had a little bit of interest. Everybody likes it, but it kind of doesn't really go anywhere. I think we need to kind of push it out a little bit more. I have a Twitter account with this hashtag thing. There's a few little bites on it, but we need more people to get on that train as well. So what happens is, there's judging and, the judging is going to start from February 7th or I guess February 8th until March the 12th. And the judges are going to pick the top 10 communities in Canada. There's five from the east and five from the west. If you're in one of the top 10, there's going to be a vote. So that's when we really need the community to get involved and vote. You can vote as many times as you want. Once you get to the top two, there's another third vote, and that's on March the 20th. So there's two voting. There's a nomination. There's the judgment. There's the first vote and the second vote. And the second vote will be completed on March the 20th. So the rules are the rules for judging. They're going to use 30% to show that we can show that we have a passion for hockey. There's 30% on actions and events that show our spirit and pride in our community. 25% on how we would use our prize money. For example, what projects would we use or start, and what upgrades would we make? And 5% would be our use of social media. They need at least 250 shares or tweets. And 10% for overall effort. So I don't have a lot of expertise on computers. I've talked to some of the staff member, and everybody seems to be in, it sounds like a good idea, but I need some help.
Hey, well,
questions?
This may be very
fortuitous. Is that going to be my new best friend?
I'm thinking that you and Ms. Tesmer may need to introduce each other. It's quite interesting because, you know, the NHL referees had their preseason here for, I believe, three falls in probably the part of this century, around 2002 or thereabouts.
Yes, when the Leafs opened, yeah.
Yeah, well, it was a little later than that, but they did take advantage of that. And so there is there's that connection here as well. And aside from the Sports Wall of Fame, we also have the hockey Heritage Sports, so we've got two facilities. Any questions by members of council? Councillor Zanko, I thank you very much for that passionate and inspiring presentation. Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, through you, Your Worship. First of all, I want to say what an awesome, awesome thing that you did by nominating us, and just listening to your presentation, I'm already excited, and there's no doubt in my mind that we absolutely can do this. We have a huge hockey community, as you know. My question is, actually I have a couple questions. First of all, I'm wondering if perhaps we can get information to put on our website. And I think as a town, we could start sharing these links. I don't see an issue with the social media, because I think that as a town, we're all actively engaged in social media as well. But the second criteria as far as judging that you mentioned, the 30%, needs to show that we take pride in our community. Was there specific examples that they gave you, or is this something, is it something that we could have shown them we've done in the past, or would it be something, you know, within the time frame of the judging that needs to be done?
I think that's all up to us. From what I read, and I read the rules of the contest, and it sounds to me that we have to show them what we have done in the past. And to me, there's just so many examples that, I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, get the kids at the schools to draw a picture, have their moms put it on Facebook of the arena when they skate, and selling hot dogs for the Team Denmark that's a cool thing too, right? And if we can get the community involved, maybe we can have get a bunch of people to write a hockey bill and with their bodies and take a picture, put it in the newspaper, something like that, anything. I think they're leaving it up to us, and I think that's why they have the 10% creativity.
Through you, and I think, and I agree, my son just came back from Denmark, and if you were to see the massive amounts of photos and different, you know, examples, exactly what you just mentioned of how hockey driven we are. I just wanted to thank you, and I think it's very exciting, and if there's anything I can do to help you have my full support whatsoever, whatever you need. And
get your little tweety hashtaggy things out and get that going. Put it on Facebook. Like I said, put it on Facebook. They actually sent me, we can actually use their logos that say Hockeyville. So we can put that on the town website. We can use that however we want. Like I said, I've already put it on my Facebook. My grandchildren's hockey teams are excited about it, but it's kind of just getting everybody rallied together. And before I started to do a lot of that, I absolutely need everybody's help. I just want to make sure you are on board. And I'm not exactly sure how we would spend the prize money if we were so fortunate to win it. So we may want to discuss that at some point, rather than have in my application. When I go to the arena, I'm usually cold, and so I said, and I the change rooms, I thought, could use a little upgrading. My grandson thinks they should look like the NHL change rooms. He wants everybody to have their own little booth and that. So everybody's going to have, but, you know, isn't that cute? Wouldn't you like, as a judge, to see a little kid say that that's what they would like to have? That's cool, right?
Just one further thing. Yes. And I can assure you that we wouldn't have trouble spending the $100,000 if we were to win that. Have you engaged the Fort Erie Minor Hockey Association at all with this?
I have talked to somebody, and they're excited about it as well. But, again, it hasn't been a lot of follow-up, so I wanted to talk to you first.
Okay, excellent, because this is the first time I'm hearing this. And February 8th is very, very soon approaching. So.
It is, yeah. The applications are really easy to do, so they don't take long. And anybody can put their own passion into the application process. It's very simple to do. So you have to be over the age of 13.
Excellent. Thank you.
Now, aside from Janine, you might also be connecting with Sean Hutton, who is our facilities manager, and he'd have some good idea of what could be that money could be utilized for in terms of arenas, what have you. Any other counselors? Well,
I know.
No.
Okay,
so
everybody write
this.
You have to write it all down, okay? So here, okay, you ready? So the actual website is KHV, Craft Hockey Bill 2016, and our Fort Erie hashtag is KHV _ Fort Erie. Let me just check that. Yeah, KBH, Craft Hockeyville, KBH _ Fort Erie. Craft Hockeyville.
Should be HB.
Yeah. Yeah. Fort Erie, just Fort Erie.
So we all learn as we go through this.
I know. And I do have Twitter, and I have tweeted, but I don't know what it goes out there. It doesn't come back. I don't know. But there are there is people that I don't know tweeting about it. So there's not a lot, but at least some people are seeing it.
Perfect. Well, we'll see what happens then over the next 2 months.
Yes, we have a lot of competition. Welland's in the competition. There's a lot of people, a lot of communities hoping for this prize, but I think we have a lot going on.
Sure, hockey was invented in Fort Erie, wasn't it?
That's what I thought. That's what I said. I said there wasn't a contest that Fort Erie was Hockeyville, and that's what I put in the nomination. So
thank you very much, Paula, and I would direct you before you leave to speak with Janine.
I will.
And the two of you do need to make contact with Sean Hutton.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
And the final delegation, tough act to follow, I know, is Craig Shufelt and Larry Graber from the Fort Erie Public Library to speak to us about purchasing ebooks.
Yes.
What could be more exciting than hockey?
As minor hockey. Although I will say that compared to some of the arenas in the Niagara District, Smithville, Welland among them, our existing locker rooms are actually kind of luxurious. You don't know what you got until you've gone to some of the other arenas. Councillor Zanko, I don't know if you would agree. You've probably been around some of them. They're really not so bad, the ones at the leisure place.
Quality of the
We've got it pretty good. Someone who spends a lot of time there. Yes, of course, it is a hard act to follow, but Your Worship and members of the council, we appreciate the opportunity to appear before you, less than a week since we saw you last, and we'll keep our comments brief. We're here to speak, as Mayor Redicott mentioned, in support of the motion that will be discussed, I believe 12A this evening, regarding the fair pricing of e-books, which is of pivotal importance to all of public libraries in Canada. It's an item that actually Councillor Nunziata mentioned several months ago, asked about it when we were here, I believe, in October. I had spoken with our town clerk about this, and Councillor McDermott had agreed to bring it forward on behalf of the library. As we indicated during our budget presentation to Council last week, ebooks are our fastest growing item in terms of circulation. They've increased over 300% since 2011, a trend that we would share with pretty much every other public library in Canada that offers them. Not surprisingly, we've been allocating increasing amounts of funding to it over the past few years, and we will do so again in 2016. Unfortunately, publishers have chosen to implement a very different pricing structure with ebooks than we see with print materials. Unlike hardcover books, where libraries pay the same price as the consumer, Most multinational publishers are instead pricing ebooks at 3 to 5 times the price that we pay, meaning that we're often paying $60 to $80 for a hardcover that we would purchase for $16.99. The same publishers are also placing caps on time limits. For example, a typical hardcover might last us 5 to 10 years, depending on wear and tear, whereas several of the publishers are making ebooks expire essentially after 1 or 2 years, or 26 circulations, which if you do the math, 26 times 2 is a year, meaning we'd have to repurchase the item multiple times going forward. Ultimately, the purchasing power of all libraries is being hindered. The one who ends up suffering is the library patron, because we allow them access to fewer books than we believe should be the case. We're hopeful that having municipalities across Ontario and the rest of the country speak up formally about the issue will lead to meaningful discussion with publishers. The ultimate goal is to create a more sustainable pricing model for both libraries and publishers. I don't think that we're asking publishers to slice prices down to exactly the same price as hardcovers. Again, ebooks can last forever, depending on agreements. But certainly there has to be a model that's somewhere in the middle. So that's really all we wanted to say. And again, I just want to express our gratitude to Council for the willingness to take action on this topic and for the continued support of the library. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shufeld. Do any members of Council have any questions? Of course, we have Councillor McDermott's resolution coming up. Very much. That concludes the delegations, and that then takes us to the consent agenda. Councillor Passero, you have a resolution which we should put on the floor with respect to that.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Redicom. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that Council approves the consent agenda items as recommended.
Are there any questions or comments with respect to any of the items in the consent agenda? Madam Clerk, I had a comment with respect to the minutes of our Council and Committee meeting last week where there was, Council and Budget, where there was an amendment to each of the resolutions. And although the amendment is faithfully recorded, the actual resolution then as amended was not printed out in full. I really think that it should be going forward so that it's clear in case anybody's challenged by reading the actual amendment. But I would suggest that going forward that we simply recite the full amended resolution, which is then voted on.
Apparently we can do that, Your Worship.
I think that makes it clear. The other question that I had related to a correspondence, and I'm wondering whether we shouldn't be supporting resolution by Pelham with respect to its request that the provincial and federal governments expand the criteria for determining grant funding going forward. Mr. Kuga, do you have any comment on that?
Yes, I do, Your Worship. We did look at that, and I think that may hinder us if we support that, to be honest with you. What they're suggesting is municipalities who are in financially good shape, and that could be because they're bedroom communities with large developments, be it residential and so forth, a lot of growth, should be treated equal or as other municipalities who, like ourselves, haven't seen a lot of growth. So I think by supporting that, we could actually be hurting ourselves.
Okay. Thank you very much for that, and thank you for being honest with me. Any other questions arising out of the consent agenda? There being none, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of adopting that is carried. That takes us then to other matters. And Councillor Zanko, you have a resolution regarding the Senior Citizens Advisory Committee.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Passero, that Council appoints Eleanor Hurst, 69ers, Maria Scott, Black Creek Leisure Homes, Seniors Group, and Ernie Patterson to the Senior Citizens Advisory Committee for the period ending November 30th, 2018.
Any questions or comments on that? All those in favor? None opposed. That is carried. And Councillor Butler, you have the next resolution.
Yes, thank you. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, Council appoints Kennedy Overholt, Mallory McCollum, Emily Thomas, Yaz Sister, and Theodore Theodora Malicone to the Mayor's Youth Advisory Committee for the period ending November 30th, 2018.
Are there any questions or comments? All of those individuals were at this evening's or this afternoon's Mayor's Youth Advisory Committee meeting, and they seem to be very very excited about getting going. And I can advise you that there is probably going to be a further four names coming forward at the February 8th meeting. Around 10 now. That will take them up to 14 or possibly 15. So I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. And Councillor, yes, Councillor Butler, you have the next resolution as well.
Thank you. Moved by myself and seconded by Councillor McDermott, that Council hereby determines that in accordance with Section 34.17 of the Planning Act, further notice is not required with respect to the deletion of changes to regulations for the residential 1 R1 zone and residential 2 R2 zone and minor corrections made since the holding of the public meeting on September 8th, 2015.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments on that? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. I should have mentioned that there is a responses to inquiries item, but there were no responses to previous inquiries. I didn't make reference to it. Is there any other items of new business or inquiries that councillors, any councillor would like to raise? Councillor Lubitz?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Listening to Mr. Annunziata earlier, I'm just wondering if we could get a little update from staff on how this is all proceeding. I was a little confused when he said that he doesn't know what is going adjacent to his property, yet they're asking for a change in the setback requirements, and I'm just wondering if staff, do we have any idea what they're planning on putting adjacent to his property?
I believe it's a duplex, and I believe that I believe Mr. Annunziata or Councillor Annunziata stated that. Mr. Brady.
Through to Councillor Lubitz. The adjacent property to Mr. Annunziata's home is currently zoned for semi-detached dwellings. The question that was before the Committee of Adjustment was the front yard setback for the semi-detached homes. And the, if I remember correctly, the what was established when the semi-detached zoning was put in place, that the setback, the front yard setback would be 9 meters or there and abouts. And it was, the request was to reduce it to 6 meters.
Yes, thank you. And I guess, what's his setback? His is existing, right?
Right.
And what would the setback be of his property? I'm just confused as to if his setback is less than 3 meters, then...
I think his point was that he has a designated heritage property, and there is a mechanism for the municipality to require or at least consider that a heritage assessment study, heritage impact assessment, be conducted when there's development adjacent to a heritage designated property. So I think he's here, but I believe his comments were directed more to that general issue, not so much the specifics of his particular case, the general issues, because people that have heritage-designated homes have made a commitment to certain standards with respect to the property and ordinary, and they're designated heritage for a purpose that's presumably beneficial to the community. I believe that was the thrust.
Yes, I understand that, but where I'm going is if you have a piece of property that's designated And if, like, you know, listening to Mr. Nunziata talking about the Planning Act and how there's some provisions in the Planning Act for adjacent properties, I'm just curious or maybe wondering why it is that once it's designated, why is it the adjacent properties, why don't they have some kind of red flag attached to them once a property is designated, so that when something comes to committee adjustments or cultural heritage, then automatically they will know that, well, there's some heritage property adjacent to this, so now the procedure has to be different, because in the Planning Act, it states that, you know, these things must be done. Or is it that they have to be done, or is it just an option that they have to be done?
Currently, I think it's an option, but those are all good points. Mr. Brady, can you comment on whether, why wouldn't the Heritage Committee notify the adjacent property owner, the Heritage home owner?
Certainly. I'll try to answer the range of questions that are there. One is, it's not the Heritage Committee's responsibility to contact the neighboring property owners. That would be, when in this case it was a variance, it would be done by the as a part of the Committee of Adjustment. They would contact. So the contact wouldn't come from the Heritage Committee or the Cultural Heritage Committee. It would come from the other. If I might, it's my understanding that the report that Councillor Nunziata has asked for would be a report about the whether or not there should be a policy in the town of Fort Erie to require a heritage impact assessment at some future date, and that date would be defined within the policy, and adjacent would be defined within the policy, et cetera. So we don't have a policy right now that says that it's required that a heritage impact assessment be done when an adjacent property to a heritage site is being considered for a range of things, be it an official plan amendment through to a site plan. My understanding, and I stand to be corrected, is that what Councillor Nunziata has asked the council to do is to ask staff for a report on whether or not it's appropriate to have a policy of that type.
Mr. Lubertz?
Yes, thank you very much. I guess, and I'd like to see the report. I don't know if I want a report from staff to recommend whether it's appropriate or not. I would like a report from staff, the pros and the cons of it all. I don't know that I want a report coming from staff that says, well, we don't think that we should go ahead and do this, or we recommend that we do it. I would like to see both sides of the story. I would like to see a report.
I'd like to get all angles too, but I'd also like to get some recommendations from staff.
Yes, well, we can get them under alternatives.
Exactly.
So I would like to see the report come forward. I'd like to put a motion forward that we request the staff to provide us with that report.
Okay.
But I would like it to cover all angles and give us the alternatives.
Right, right. Is there a seconder for that? Councilor Zanko? So we've got a resolution on the floor, and the resolution is that staff provide a report with respect to a policy, a potential policy requiring heritage impact assessments on development that takes place adjacent to designated heritage properties. That fulfill your understanding, Mr. Brady?
Yes, that does fulfill my understanding. One of the things that staff is likely to do as part of that report is that they will probably not look at just the adjacent properties, but also at heritage properties themselves.
That's fine. That would be fine. I think whatever information we can get would be helpful. Is there any questions or comments? All those in favor of the motion? That's unanimous, so that's carried. Thank you. Any other items of new business? Then that takes us to motions, and Councillor McDermott, you have a rather lengthy resolution with respect to e-books. I've read it and it's quite exciting.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Butler. Race public libraries provide residents with a community space where they can freely access a wide variety of information in both print and digital format. And whereas municipal governments are key funders of public libraries, appoint public library boards, and work in partnership with public library boards to deliver services that are responsive to community needs. And whereas electronic books, e-books, are becoming an increasingly preferred medium for library users to access content and information, and whereas major multinational publishers are charging public libraries significantly higher costs to purchase e-books for their collections than they charge consumers, and whereas imposing a reasonably high cost on public libraries to purchase e-books is not an appropriate solution to the publishing industry's concerns regarding the evolution of digital technology, including piracy. Now, therefore, be it resolved that Council requests that the Ontario Minister of Tourism, Culture and Sport work with the federal and other provincial and territorial governments to find a solution that will allow public libraries to purchase e-books from publishers at a fair and reasonable price. And further, that Council directs staff to send a copy of this resolution to the Federation of Canadian Municipalities and the Association of Municipalities in Ontario, MPP Wayne Gates, and our neighboring municipalities within the Niagara region for their support and action.
Thank you. I'm just wondering, I remember reading this on the weekend, and I was just wondering whether the MP shouldn't also be sent a copy of this. And I wonder if, Councillor McDermott, you might want to add that as a friendly amendment. Also, the MP, Rob Nicholson, copy of this.
I have no problem with that, Your Worship.
If that's agreeable to your seconder, then I suppose. Okay. Okay, that is on the floor then. Are there any questions or comments? Councillor Zanko.
Thank you. Through you, Your Worship, I just wanted to let Councillor McDermott know that I do support this motion, and I think it's something that absolutely should be looked at given the fact of today's modern technology. So I do commend you for bringing this motion forward.
Any other questions or comments? All those in favor? Unopposed, that is carried. Now, Councillor McDermott, I had asked if you would take over the chair, but as it turns out, Councillor Lubberts is actually the acting mayor. So
very
I wonder,
good. Thank you, Your Worship.
I wonder, Councillor Lubberts, if you would be willing to take over the chair so that I can read the next resolution.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop, and I will allow you to proceed as with your motion.
Thank you. So I move, seconded by Councillor Butler, whereas from time to time municipal assets of a cultural, historic, or recreational significance require restoration, renovation, or repair, and whereas members of the community often wish to volunteer their time, energy, and or materials to assist the municipality in restoring, renovating, or repairing such municipal assets, and whereas the desire of members of the community, whether individual or nonprofit or corporate, to participate in such projects benefits the town and helps to build community spirit, and whereas there are certain issues relative to supervision, monitoring, insurance, and safety that are associated with the participation of members of the public in such projects, now therefore be it resolved that staff be directed to investigate and make recommendations to this council within 120 days regarding the establishment of a volunteer work program relative to municipally owned assets that would permit individuals, nonprofit organizations, or corporations to volunteer their time, energy, and expertise, or to donate materials to the restoration, renovation, or repair of such cultural, historic, or recreational assets. And if I may just briefly speak to that.
Yes, go ahead. Thank you.
Yes, this has been brought forward. We have a current example of this type of arrangement that has been done through the auspices of a nonprofit organization. That's the Kinsman Pool that Councillor Passero has been working on for quite some time. So that may be the only mechanism that we can utilize, but there may be other mechanisms, and I think it's important for us to take a look at that. I know that there were a number of individuals that were interested in some involvement with respect to the Point Avenue Lighthouse. We don't have this type of program. We've got a old engine at the Sugar Bowl, 6218, which is part of Canadian Railway Heritage. It needs work. There are individuals that are willing to participate in some type of restoration project. We don't have a program currently that would permit that type of situation. As the resolution says, we know that there are supervision, we know that there are monitoring, insurance, and in particular safety issues that would need to be addressed. And there may very well be other projects in the future that relate to municipally owned assets that could benefit from this type of program. And there are programs in other municipalities in Ontario. So there is at least an opportunity for us to look into this and support this so that we can find out from staff what would be required and how we could go about doing this if we're inclined to do that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. And that motion is on the floor. Is there any members of council that have any comments or any questions? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Councilor Lubberts. Mayor Redekop and I have chatted about this, and I'm fully supportive. The only reason the Kinsman Pool opened was because of tenants of a program similar to this. It would have not happened in any other way. It just wouldn't have been possible. And I think going this route helps us open up an entire new skill set amongst our volunteers that are out there who would like to contribute, but a board and committee type of atmosphere just isn't for them. So I think this will help us engage volunteerism across all sectors of the community.
Any other members of council? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? All opposed? Any opposed? None. I'll turn the chair back over to Mayor Redekop.
Thank you, Councillor Lubert, and thank you, councillors. There are no other motions. Are there any notices of motion? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. I'm going to read this on behalf of Councillor Nutt, who's still in transit. It has to do with our business subdivision chair and vice chairs. It was something that he had originally intended to bring back, I believe, in the fall, but because of other priorities, we're leaving it until now. It reads as follows. Whereas subsection 17.8A of the current Council Rules of Procedure bylaw 42-2015 dictates that the chair and vice chair of each business subdivision are appointed for a period that ends on September 30th in the second year of the term, and whereas subsection 17.8B of the current Council Rules of Procedure bylaw 42-2015 dictates that the chair and vice chair of each business subdivision are selected for the remainder of the term, and whereas bylaw number 66-2015 appointed members of council as chair and vice chair for each business subdivision on April 27, 2015, in accordance with the current Council Rules of Procedures bylaw 42-2015, and whereas shortening the term of appointment for chair and vice chair for each business subdivision may provide councillors with more opportunities to serve in these capacities. Now, therefore, this council resolves that the Council Rules of Procedure bylaw number 42-2015 be amended to reflect the term of appointment for chair and vice chair for each business subdivision to be annual rather than biannual. And further, and this is the part that may take a little bit of tweaking because the dates are now out of whack, but bylaw number 66-2015 be amended to reflect the date change of chair and vice chair appointments for each business subdivision. And I'll leave it to the expertise of the clerk then to fill in those blanks.
Okay, thank you. And I predict that that's going to find favor. Well, I guess we'll find out in 2 weeks. Are there any other notices of motion? Councillor Passero.
I don't have the wording tonight. I was chatting with our clerk, so it's something I'll bring back in a couple weeks' time. But it's on a similar vein, and rather than business subdivisions, it has to do with the overall boards and committees. And I've had a couple colleagues express their desire that they've served now almost going on a year and a half on Committee A. They'd like to get some experience on Committee B. And I think it's maybe something we could look at in a similar vein to this. So I'll be bringing that forward a couple weeks' time with the help of the clerk.
Okay. Thank you. Any others? Being none, then that takes us to consideration of bylaws. Councillor Lubberts, I note that you have the bylaw package, and we need a motion to move to deal with. Madam Clerk, we don't need a motion. We'll simply remove bylaw 5 from the package. So, Councillor Lubberts, if you would read the first and second reading of the bylaw package without bylaw number 5, please. And then I think what you're going to have to do when we get to bylaw 5 is ask Councillor McDermott to deal with that. Sheed?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Moved by myself and seconded by Councillor McDermott that bylaw package containing bylaw number 1-2016 to authorize the mayor and acting mayor and the treasurer or deputy treasurer of the corporation of the town of Fort Erie to borrow certain sums to meet expenses for the year of 2016. Bylaw 2-2016 to provide for interim taxes for the year 2016. Bylaw 3-2016 to adopt the 2016 water and wastewater budget, to adopt rates and fees for the year 2016, and to amend bylaw number 240-96. Bylaw 4-2016 to amend fees and charges bylaw number 40-09 as amended, the 2016 review. Bylaw number 6-2016 to designate a downtown Stevensville core area community improvement project area. Bylaw 7-2016 to adopt the downtown Stevensville core area community plan. Bylaw 8-2016 to amend zoning bylaw number 12990, being the comprehensive zoning bylaw for all lands within the town of Fort Erie residential regulations. Bylaw number 9-2016 to authorize the sale of lands in the Fort Erie Business Park west side of Pettit Road to Truck King Logistics, Inc. And bylaw 10-2016 to reestablish the Committee of Adjustment and to authorize a delegation of approval authority for uncontested consent applications to the Director of Community and Development Services and to repeal bylaws number 6-70, 206-99, and 7-2000. And bylaw number 11-2016 to amend zoning bylaw number 12990 as amended, removal of holding provision SE, southeast corner of West Main Street and Old Mill Road. 800547 Ontario Limited, Ed Lachishian, is given first and second reading.
All those in favor? Opposed? The bylaw package, excluding bylaw 5, is on the floor for questions or comments. Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Mr. Jansen. I have a question with respect to 2016 borrowing. And I meant to send you an email earlier to ask you these questions, so I do apologize. How often do we borrow money from the bank?
Through the chair to Councillor Butler. It's not our practice to use this. This is something we do every year at the beginning of the year to provide for those instances where we might need to. It's fairly common in terms of having a credit facility available to us, but we have not used this in many, many years.
Butler.
Okay, thank you. Then moving on to number 2-2016, so that's just basically the same thing just to protect ourselves, or?
Mr. Jansen.
The bylaw number 2 is to provide for the interim taxes. So the first billing for taxes goes out in advance of the rates being firmly established for 16. So the first two tax bills of the year being interim are based on last year's amounts. And so this bylaw provides for collecting it in that manner in advance of the final 2016 levy.
And through you, Your Worship. So this is just a matter of practice then.
That's right.
Thank you.
Any other councillors? Ms. Rubenko, with respect to the last bylaw that Councillor Butler referred to, which is bylaw number 2, the title is quite clear that this is to provide interim taxes for the year 2006, but the actual body of the document doesn't specify that. So as an example, paragraph 2, and I don't know if you have it in front of you, talks about amounts to be levied, but it doesn't specify for 2016. I'm wondering, you may want to consider that as to whether it's necessary or not. And I know there was another bylaw that we had spoken about that needed clarification on one of the preambles, the third preamble of one of the bylaws. I think it was a planning bylaw. Do you recall that? That's been corrected. Residential Regulations Amendment. And finally, I had communicated with you with respect to the bylaw 10, which deals three bylaws relative to the Committee of Adjustment, which seemed to me left a vacuum within which we have currently appointed members to that committee. I had raised the question as to whether or not they needed to be reappointed, and your answer was, I believe, wasn't necessary. But could you clarify that, please?
Following past practice, Your Worship, we did look at the last bylaw that established the Committee of Adjustment, and there was no reappointment of all the members at that time. So we followed that same procedure in reestablishing it, that we still have the current appointees in place.
And then finally, Mr. Cookett, with respect to the planning, the fees and charges bylaw, which is bylaw 4, which amends bylaw number 40-09, within that there are a number of increased fees with respect to planning. And I know that part of the, most of these increases really relate to inflation, but in response to the proposition, well, these fees are up, what are we getting for it? I know that there have been a number of steps that have been undertaken recently with respect to improving responsiveness within planning and building and trying to address the significant workload that we've had. I wonder if you could comment on that, because I believe that that's a justification for some of these increases, even though they're simply related to inflation.
Yes, to you, Your Worship. Some of the things that we have taken on are improved customer service, and I can give you a few examples. We previously did not have someone at the building department, planning department counter who actually received submissions. We have changed that, and we've created a pilot program where we've hired an individual who actually does that. So when someone has a development or building permit application, this gentleman receives the submissions and reviews it right there and then with the person submitting them. So if there's missing information or further information required, we can let them know right there and then. It doesn't go and sit somewhere and then we respond later once we've had an opportunity to look at it. So it expedites the whole process. That's one of the things we have done. The other is we've set up a pre-consultation with developers. So if they're looking at developing, be it residential, commercial, we meet with them, review what's required, step them through the process, and hopefully eliminate questions going down the road or further costs. So we can explain to them exactly what is needed up front. There's no surprises. The other thing we have done recently is established deadlines for planning submissions. So as you have seen the report recently, is we've set targets for our staff, and we now will try to meet those targets. So moving the process through. We set goals. Let's meet those goals. Let's provide a better service for people coming in and doing development in this town. So those are just some of the examples of the things that we're doing to help the process, expedite the process, be a developer-friendly municipality.
And I believe there's also been additional staff hired in the planning department?
That is correct as well, yes. And just to go back, the pilot program that we started where we've got a plans intake to individual up there, program has worked out so well that we're going to advertise and fill that position permanently. So that will be a permanent position. It's worked out very well. And I must say the gentleman that is doing it right now has done a fabulous job. I've had nothing but compliments on his efforts up there.
Yes, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Then we'll go to third and final reading for the bylaw package, unless bylaw 5, and that's Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that bylaws 1, 2016, 2, 2016, 3, 2016, 4, 2016, 6, 2016, 7, 2016, 8, 2016, 9, 2016, 10, 2016, and 11, 2016 are given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and clerk under the corporate seal.
This successfully auditioned for Sesame Street. any questions or comments? All those in favor? Carried. Councillor McDermott, I wonder if you could do first and second reading for bylaw number 5, please.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Moved by Councillor Lubert, seconded by myself.
No, Councillor Lubert can't move that. You can move it.
Okay, I'll move it.
Maybe Councillor Butler would second it.
Okay. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Butler, that bylaw 5-2016 to amend fees and charges by bylaw number 40-09 is amended building permit fees is given first and second reading.
Questions? Sorry. All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. That bylaw is on the floor for any questions or comments. Being none? Oh, sorry. Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just a question. I don't have a problem moving this forward, but it is my understanding that we will be receiving a report with regard to a comparison through towns.
There actually was a memo that was circulated among other memos, and it came out of came from Diana Kelly, and there were three memos attached to it. Apparently, there was one of them was relative to the information that had been requested regarding the comparison of the town of Fort Erie's building fees and the rest of the communities in Niagara. So it's there. It has to be delved into, and I believe sent out on Thursday around 17 or thereabouts. So you may have that, but if not, I have a copy, and I'd be happy to share it with you.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Councillor Passero, third and final reading, please.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that bylaw 5-2016 is given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and clerk under the corporate seal.
Questions or comments? All those in favor? That is carried. Councillor Butler, you have the next resolution, number 9.
Yes, thank you. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor McDermott, that bylaw number 12-2016 to confirm the actions of Council at its meeting held on January 18th, 2016 is given first and second reading.
All those in favor? And opposed, that is carried. That bylaw is on the floor if there are any questions or comments. Takes us to Councillor Zanko, resolution number 10.
Thank you. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Passero, that bylaw number 12-2014 is given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and the clerk under the corporate seal.
Questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. That takes us to scheduling of meetings. Councillor Lubertz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. We have a meeting on Wednesday, January 20th at 5:30 for the Environmental Advisory Committee in Conference Room 2 here at the Town of Fort Erie.
Is that at 5:30?
Yes, 5:30.
Thank you. Councillor Zanko.
Thank you. We have a meeting tomorrow, January 19th, first under our strategic plan. For strong customer service relationships and communications, and that starts at 5:30. We also have a cemetery advisory committee meeting here tomorrow night as well, January 19th, which is at 5 p.m.
Any other meetings?
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. Not a meeting, but just a reminder. I usually do it at this time of every year about the good work the Italo Hall does in our community, and a reminder that every other Thursday they have their pasta nights, and I've been asked by the admin staff at Garrison Road to announce that this Thursday they are one of the recipients, but it's a great organization or charity every other Thursday, and encourage all members of the community to support them. Not only do you support the organization, but you also support the Italo Hall as well for the good work they do.
Great. Thank you. If there are no other meetings, then Councillor Butler, I wonder if you would encroach upon Councillor Nutt's territory. He's not here. It's his fault to move that we adjourn.
My pleasure. Moved by myself and seconded by Councillor Zanko that Council adjourns at 7:44 p.m. to reconvene into special meeting at UP Council on Monday, January 25th, 2016.
All those in favor? That is carried. Thank you.